Today we talk freedom of expression and being true to yourself as we chat to Robin Nathan, aka Fleabite, on Benny Asking People Questions. Asking People Questions is proudly supported by Major Minor Music Australia, who wish to thank the people of the Gadigal Nation on whose lands all their work is done. If you'd like to know more, then head along to mmma.com.au. Music for children often presents the artist who's making it with the opportunity to explore themselves musically. Simply put, children don't really care. If they like the song, they like the song. They are rarely fussed as to whether or not it fits within the overall timbre of the artist. Some artists revel in this notion of freedom, while others rejoice in the comfort of their skill set. However, few artists embody this idea of freedom more succinctly than today's guest. Her music is adventurous, to say the least, and a constant journey into the unexpected, with ideas and melodies that are not only unique to her alone, but unique in a genre that is growing with complexity and choice. Listening to her music provides such escapism that weirdly it brings you full circle back to the present, where she reminds us that fun, silliness, and experimenting are ideas that ultimately bring us closer to the way life could be, or if I may be so bold, the way life should be. She is a revered and highly celebrated artist in both the world of music for children and for adults, and I'm excited to sit back and hear her reflect on the career that has been thus far. Welcome to Benny Asking People Questions, Robin Nathan, aka Fleabite, all the way from New Zealand, Auckland, New Zealand, I believe, is more specific answer. Question.
Thank you. That was a wonderful introduction, and right at the beginning, you kind of hit the essence of what I do on the nail, which, presuming you are a hammer, which is that that notion of freedom is quite important to me. And I feel that I have been very lucky in my life to have had a lot of independence and space. I'm the youngest of six children. All the expectations were wasted on the previous five children. I grew up on a farm. I've just had a lot of freedom to do what I want. You know, the others all had to go to different, you know, schools that were supposed to be the good schools. I could just do anything because people failed at all the expectations that went previously. And I think that's the gift, that if I have a gift, it's I want to pass on that feeling of freedom to children, to be free to express themselves, to experiment, to come up with, you know, whatever ideas come to mind and just follow them without worrying about, you know, is it good or bad or whatever. And I think that is the essence of the style of music I do, and my background is that I'd like to carry on and pass on that feeling of freedom. I don't want to be telling kids what they should be doing. I'm not from a teaching background, so I don't have sort of had that training. So I think you just captured it perfectly there.
Oh, well, then we could probably wrap it up here then.
So thanks, Benny.
So I appreciate the time.
Yeah.
I'm a big, tough truck.
She's a big, tough truck.
I'm a big, tough truck, but I gone and got stuck. Now I'm spinning in the muck, so I called my buddy Chuck. He's a bigger, tough truck.
Bigger, tough truck.
Hey, Chuck, buddy, I'm flat out of luck.
Hey, chuck 'em out of luck.
Hey, chuck 'em out of luck.
Hey, chuck 'em out of luck, 'cause my wheels got stuck.
10-4, rubber duck,
said Chuck.
I'm coming over, I'm a bigger tough truck.
Bigger tough truck.
It's funny you should say the teacher thing, though, because one of the common threads I find in doing these podcasts when you talk to teachers is teachers are usually the ones that who are the least likely to be, I guess, rigid or predictable in the music or the content they create, largely because teachers, I find, spend their whole day having to adhere and toe a certain line that when they come to their own expression, they actually just want children to be a bit free. And I actually find, and like you're saying, you're not a teacher, but it's weird. It still sits in that. Yeah, I think the people that spend their lives having to be quite structured do find themselves really letting loose and trying to encourage children to be a little bit more exotic and free.
Perhaps I expressed that incorrectly. And I mean, it seems to be with kids, so if you either come from sort of a pedagogical frame of mind or you're kind of coming from a childlike point of mind. So it's not it's not whether you're a teacher or not. That's got nothing to do with it. Sorry. So it's more of the pedagogical sort of frame of mind as opposed to basically my mind is at the level of a 7.5-year-old is what I tend to think.
Yeah.
And so I just go with that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think you can hear that. And you, that pedagogical thing, I think you're absolutely right. There's a notion that everything must be a very overt channel for learning. And it often negates the idea that children are just learning all the time, regardless of what's there. Okay. Look, we could talk about the pedagogy. I am a teacher, so that could go on forever. So let's now, generally with these podcasts, I'm sort of trying to step away from the usual "Who are you? How did you get started?" kind of questions.
You're going to ask me how I'm going to die?
But but I kind of have to ask you this question because your career is so extensive, and I feel like I'd be doing a bit of an in-service to people that are only going to discover you through this podcast, which is very unlikely. But if there is anyone, you have such a rich history musically and creatively that I think we might need just a very quick little update
on where you've come from. All right. Yep.
So where did it start? Where did you transition? Because I know you had quite a successful career in New Zealand as a performer for adults.
Is there another way of saying that?
Yeah, music. Yeah, music for adults. There you go. But then you've obviously transitioned into chat. How did that come about? And do you recall where that started?
No, it wasn't delineated because mostly I find that what the sort of defining thing about my stuff is that there's a sense of humour, and there was a sense of humour in a lot of the stuff that I was doing before sort of the kids stuff took over. But I have always written stories for kids. I started working in radio, and I used to write stories for kids that were then published in like school journals and also broadcast for radio. So that's kind of where I started the kids stuff. I used to perform with a group called When the Cat's Been Spayed you wouldn't have heard of over there. That was kind of a rip-off title of a successful mainstream group in New Zealand, which was an all-women band. And we sort of did a kind of a musical theatre kind of a thing. Three of us, we played all the instruments. You know, we'd turn up and people say, well, when is the band arriving? We'd have to say, well, we are the band. And we toured to every nook and cranny of New Zealand. We went on a million Arts Council grants and we were invited to play overseas. We played at Mardi Gras in Sydney, actually.
Oh, cool.
At one point we were the 8 o'clock act on at some venue. That was a long time ago. And I used to perform, but you know, in that case we wore ridiculous outfits and all looked like drag queens. And the other two people I performed with, Jackie Clark, who is very well known in New Zealand and is a very good performer and a natural star, and Charlotte Yates, who is a guitarist, singer, songwriter, and also a very good producer of musical events. So that's where I sort of started getting into it. And that whole thing came about purely by accident, getting together a group of people for it to make money as a benefit concert. So when you say career, I mean, it's not like there has been a lot of planning that's gone into what I've done. It's funny to look back on it and call it a career because from where I'm sitting, I tend not to think of it in that way. I'm not that far ahead of myself. But so that's when I was doing a lot of performing for adults, but it was in a sort of a festival, a theatery festival
kind of
audience.
Because I listened to some of the tracks and watched some of the videos, and that element of fun and I wouldn't even say experimental, but fun. Fun was there from the very early on. Like,
fun is there or it's not there, isn't it? I mean, you either have a sense of humour or you don't. It doesn't matter if you're 93 or 3.
Yeah.
I think kind of you've got that or you haven't.
I want to go do it. Let me show you how. I've eaten lots of sugar and I brushed my teeth. You're going to go crazy.
At the same time as I was doing that, I was doing, I was a radio producer for, I started off working for Access Radio, which I'm sure you have in Australia. We probably, you know, got the concept from you. So I was working, learning, teaching and working alongside people, community groups, making their own programs. And I also was doing music in a theatrical kind of working with, because that thing where we were touring around Wynn and Catesby's Bay, that made money and was successful. On the other side, I was doing weird shit kind of theatre stuff with my more experimental friends who weren't getting funding for it. So those three things were sort of the basis of it until I'd kind of had enough of performing. When it took a shot of whiskey to get me on in the second half, I realised that that was not probably the ideal way to be. Oh, wasn't that quieter one perked up in the second half? From that point,
I think it's when you need a shot of whiskey just to get out of bed in the morning. I think that's when it really becomes a problem.
That's true. Then I've moved into something that actually fits. I can still do the performance stuff, but it's not really what I want to do. So I've become more of a writer-producer as time goes on, which suits me a lot better. I seem to have got more introverted and less extroverted. But we certainly did a lot of performing, the three of us, and we did advertisements. We did a lot of advertisements, and we played at, you know, advertising, Christmas do's. We did all of that side of stuff. And it was with someone who was involved in that Fat Cat and Fish Face came about, which there was no defining moment. I have no idea why or how that came about. And that was like seven albums worth of really weird and wonderful material that we did anonymously. So, you know, getting any PR at all was almost impossible.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to perform live and the other person didn't want people to know who we were. So that was quite tricky. So that was sort of a fairly underground.
Yeah, that's definitely a media person's nightmare. Like,
right, exactly. But that was fun, and that was just like a casual thing that was sort of on the side once we stopped performing as the three of us. And we all did different things at that time as well. Like one person was a vet, and the other person, she's always been a performer. Jackie's always been a performer foremost. And I'd always done radio production, so I am actually happiest being a step back and creating stuff is really what I like to do. Although I can pull off these interviews if I have to, it's not my natural, it's not my natural sort of thing these days. But I'm trying to get better at it because that's how the world turns, especially with social media these days.
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, so much of what you just said lends itself to a whole bunch of the questions I have following up. And I'll try to remember to reference your answer here when I get to those questions. But obviously with this history of such, eclectic amount of stuff and also the way you talk about the previous album that you had with Fat Cat and Fish Face, you know, it felt that idea of you being really experimental and always just wanting to, I guess, push yourself or just happy to go, hey, this is where I'm being called, I'm going to go and do that. Do you find working in the children's space now as Fleabody, is that kind of covering all the bases for you, or do you still feel a call to go and do other projects when they arise, or do you feel like you're kind of able to put all your, I guess, is your creative wants and needs being met by Fleabite?
Oh, no one's ever asked about my creative wants and needs before, Benny. That's very kind of you to think of them. I haven't thought of that specific thing before, but I do find that the kids genre does, I mean, it can go anywhere. Mm. It's called kids stuff, but kids are people, and it's only a relatively recent thing that there's been a, you know, marketing stuff to kids. And I always say, well, the funding's there for me to get do kids stuff, then I will keep doing it. I have a few side sort of things like doing library music. I've got some friends that have sort of a library stuff, and that's been quite good for me to learn to do more of the technical stuff, which I'm still not brilliant at, but because that stuff wasn't using lyrics, which really are a key sort of thing for me. So that's been an interesting thing. And I'm just going to veer back because the Lord of the Rings thing coming to production coming to New Zealand and Wellington in particular got me involved in doing music technology because I hooked up with a couple of Americans who came here and were working on it. I live in Auckland now, but lots of very creative people came to Wellington from, you know, all over the world to work on that. And I was lucky to hook up with a couple through totally random events, which really is how my life has kind of gone. And that was a good thing for me because within music technology, you can, because I'm a generalist, I'm not brilliant at playing anything, but I have the freedom, again, to move in many different directions with different sounds because of the advent of music technology. I still have to get someone else to mix it because I'm sick to death of the song after, you know, writing it and arranging it and do all the rest, and it's really good to have someone who's more technically able. But in terms of if children's music is like satisfying my needs, you can kind of go almost anywhere. And that was especially good with things like Fat Cat and Fish Face. We didn't shy away from death or anything like that. I find actually the more I listen to kids' music, it's sort of taming me down a bit because I can see, you know, for streaming and stuff, you get a lot more streams if you do happy, upbeat. But even then, things surprise me still. I never know which songs people are going to like. And I tend to use the songs, like the old idea of a record, you know, putting out a record, which really was just a record of what you were doing at that time. And I still, because I'm not a single kind of person, which is, you know, the preferred mode of the day, but I'm kind of into that record idea of things being a record. So when I put out an album, the songs to me will relate to specific things in my life going on at that time. And I might be translating them in a way that's more suitable for kids or just weird people. But I just use my life as fodder for what is happening. I don't sit down and think, gosh, everyone,
what's next?
One thing to be kind to yourself or a dinosaur song. Yeah. I just kind of do what is occurring in my life.
Sing a song of sushi. Song of sushi, splashed with soy sauce, splashed with soy sauce.
Miso wants some miso,
miso wants some miso for my second course.
It's funny you should talk about that because there's one thing about your blogs which I think is really beautiful where you talk about the songs and their moments to you personally. Like, I think a really good example is Kittens on the Brain.
Oh, Kittens on the Brain. Okay.
And it's really, and you also have it with Pirate Meets Flea where you take an aspect of whatever is important about that song to you and you talk about it. And I think that's really, there's something really quite beautiful about that. And you ask, like, do people read blogs anymore? I don't think it's relevant because your blogs aren't.
Good.
Well, I don't think your blogs are
meant to be read.
I think the second you say blog, everyone has a notion of what blog means. But yours are a genuine kind of insight into the mechanics and the creation of why the song exists. And I think that's very different. But it also lends to everything you're just saying about this idea of, you know, a record or is symbolic of where you are at that moment. And I think that's what your blogs do. They kind of pull people back in and go, yes, it's, you know, Kittens on the Brain, you could argue. Sure, it's about cats and that'll fit in all these playlists and isn't that beautiful. However, having that story behind it just gives it this whole other level of, I don't know, connection as a listener. It just makes you feel you can kind of get it a bit more. I mean, do you ever stop and think, I mean, the blog's really just you going, hey, I'm just musing on this anyway, I might as well write it down and put it somewhere.
Well, I do like writing. I really like writing, and I really like words, and I really like lyrics, and they are, you know, quite a big aspect of what I would say. If I had to, you know, if I had to give my strengths, I would say lyrics and rhythm are kind of my natural strengths, and the rest of it I can kind of do. But as I say, I'm a generalist, and I'm sure there are millions of people that are a lot better at things like that than I am.
I don't know. I think you're pretty good at it.
Kittens on the brain. They're in my hair, they're in my eyes. I always hear their plaintive cries. They're underfoot, they're overhead. They're in my breakfast, on my bed.
There is this notion in music, obviously, which we've talked quite heavily on already about, you know, just the dynamics with styles and things like that, which you generally just take to this whole other crazy next level. I mean, there's no, I learned very early on not even to pretend I knew what was coming next. Is your writing style really just about just whatever presents itself at the moment, or do you actually intentionally do sit down and go, how can I be really different to the last one? I don't mean mathematically, but just like
conscious thing to it. No, and in fact, the only times I've tried to be conscious about stuff, like I tried to write a song about population, like the world overpopulation. Mm. As soon as I do that, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I can't work like that. And I really, in no other aspect of my life am I as free as when I'm just writing stuff. I really do just go with whatever comes. I mean, I go back and edit it and polish it and stuff. But I'm a control freak in other aspects of my life, but I'm not so much in, well, I suppose I am because I'm creating it and that is a total control thing. But I'm a lot freer. Again, that word free, I'm a lot freer where I go and what I'll follow when I'm doing this stuff than in the rest of my life, and I'm not quite sure why.
Hey, the music's great, so I wouldn't,
thank you.
I wouldn't spend too much time trying to work it out.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about 2023 because you did at the start talk about, you know, your idea of singles and how you don't do a lot of singles. But 2020...
Well, I do now. It's like if you can't beat them, join them.
Well, so you have to, exactly. But one thing that was really beautiful about a lot of the singles you released was the collaborations that you did. Obviously, there's... Louise Brandt, there's Nanato Seiko, I believe, there's Itty Bitty Beats, there's Levity Beat, there's Loopy Tunes. We'll get to Levity in a minute, but I just kind of want to start.
Different because the others are more like, I don't think of myself as a great singer, so I'm always very happy to have other people sing on work I do. And so those are more like featuring things where people come in and sing, and I'm eternally grateful for it, but... The thing I did with Levity was a collaboration, what I would think of as a true collaboration, because we worked together to write them, write the song.
Yeah, but getting back to these collaborations with some of those other ones, I mean, there's the thing that's quite striking about them is even though you say they were kind of guest appearances type of thing, they felt very true to each artist as if, like, you really honed in on it. It felt like a collaboration between each person. Which I think is quite unique for a collaboration. I mean, I'm guilty of sort of going, hey, can I get you to come and sing on this? That would be great. But it's still my song. Whereas this felt like everyone really belonged to the song that they were given. Is that just you making really wonderful choices, or is it you giving them also the freedom to come in and go, okay,
yeah, let's find I wouldn't have anyone do stuff unless I liked what they do, in which case just let them do what they do. But they pretty much, not in every case, I'd prefer to have people bring some of themselves to it, or else why ask them?
Yeah.
Also, I'm not a natural, you know, I'm not a networker. I'm not a great networker. I still work with a lot of the same people that I like working with friends and people I know, and I'm not a brilliant networker, so I tend to go with people who I feel like I have something which is, you know, a certain quality that we have in common, but also a certain mindset. I mean, people are very, very different. Nanako Sato, I don't know at all, and she came and sang on this last song called Sing a Song of Sushi through the Itty Bitty Beats Girls. They all went to jazz school together in Christchurch, and it was very nice to have a real Japanese person involved in a song about, with a Japanese flavour.
Yeah.
Because I've been caught out by about that one before, you know, the old cultural appropriation thing, which is always worth, now I think it through.
Yeah, totally. But there's one beautiful song, The Whales Trails, which you do with Loopy Tunes. And it is particularly stunning, that song.
Oh, good. Thanks.
And then, so obviously, moving my way back, I found that you previously released that song. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it felt like the Loopy Tunes version is really just the same song, but with them adding stuff over the top.
Well, they're singing in Māori, and the original was in English. That's the basic difference.
But are they singing your melody from the original? Because it felt like it was just the exact song, but they've just come on top of it and added their bits to it, or it was
It was translated into Māori, so it's a bit different from that point of view. But otherwise, it was exactly the same.
Yeah. Why that song? Just because you felt it needed that? All the songs over all the years that you've been doing it, that one was the one?
No, well, there were two songs that I'd worked with them on, that being one of them, and the other one was a sort of a gentle waltz called Cry to the Moon. I don't know, I just had a natural feeling that it would work in Te Reo Māori in both cases. Mm. And I'm not Māori, and I would prefer to have someone who was even a little bit Māori sing.
Ke raro I te moana, ke raro I ngā ngāru. It's an incredibly beautiful song, but what's really beautiful about it is it was kind of the first one I heard heard in this portion of doing the research into the music and...
it's the latest one, yeah.
Yeah, so of course, working backwards. But I think what was quite stunning about it is it's surprisingly that kind of aspect that you have in your music, it crops up again and again where... It's really a soundscape. It is a song. Of course, there's lyrics and there's verses and things, but it's this real soundscape element which you revisit, in particularly, which we'll get to now, your relationship with Levity.
Levity is the king of collaboration in New Zealand kids' music. Mm. He's collaborated with everybody. He is very, very good at it. For me, I don't do it that often or with very many people. So him and I did we tried to put out an album under the name Beat Bite, a bit of Flea Bite and a bit of Levity Beat. But we found that tricky to do in one thing. So to fit into the socials, we did it as two EPs, Beat Bite 1 and Beat Bite 2.
But they're separated very beautifully. I mean, that's the thing. They are two very separate albums. And sort of going back to the idea of the Wales Trails and then getting to Beat Bite 2, because Beat Bite 2 was the first one I listened to. And it struck me as this album where I would have loved to have been there to watch it be created, because it feels like it's this thing of just, it is just this back and forth. And you're obviously not in the same town. And it just felt this album of just constantly building and creating on something. And it's really lyrically sparse, which is really quite beautiful, which sort of forces you just to enjoy this. You know, there's some moments in it, like listening to Echo Locating Machine. It just threw me back to, felt like I was watching Pump Up the Volume again. It just was such an amazing track. But it really, that whole EP is really just... I don't know. It feels like it is just really the two of you just going, hey, I've got this noise. I've got this noise. I've got this noise. You add a noise. I'm going to add a noise. And let's see what happens after 3 minutes.
That's why I say that one, from my point of view, was like a true collaboration. Levity is technically much more advanced than me. He set up a Dropbox thing where we shared a Pro Tools session because we both use Pro Tools. So I would put forward an idea, call it version one. He would take that, do something different or change it, call it version two. And we went back forth like that. And the good thing about that collaboration is neither of us are that precious. We know there are, endless amounts of ideas there. So you just keep going until you do things you both like. And the songs were created in totally different ways with the basic idea, as you were kind of alluding to, that because we thought, what's a good angle to have with this? And we wanted to have, a sound rather than music, sound as the basic idea of it, like a sound effect or a sound from nature. You could have called it ping pong because of the back and forth.
Yeah, nature. Yeah.
And one of the songs did have a ping pong ball as like the main percussive.
Yeah, instrument. Yeah.
But that echolocating machine, in that case, he had this bit of rock and roll stuff that he did the he'd done the basic soundscape for it, gave it to me, and I made a song of it and put lyrics and a melody. Mm. And then actually his daughter, Malaika, sang it. So that one, they came about through many different ways. Some of them, one of us came up with almost the whole, with a whole musical idea, and the other one, probably me usually doing the lyrics because that's sort of my kind of thing. The one that's called Truck in the Muck was a very back and forward one. It has sound effects, lots of sound effects with old sort of American trucks and indicators.
Yeah, the indicator and stuff, yeah.
And a story woven around that. But yeah, so there was a lot of care taken in terms of the back and forth nature, and then we, kind of knew when it was done.
What did you say?
Say, 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 say.
What did you mean?
Fleetwood One is more, I feel, as a listener, it just feels like they're more, not completed songs in terms of the way they're presented, but the way they concluded, but feel a bit more completed as the way they may have potentially been presented to one another. Like it feels like you said, one of you said, hey, I've got this song about this thing and let's see if we can build on that. Whereas Beat Bite 2 really feels like it was just an exchange of sounds and ideas that would eventually culminate into something else.
I'm glad you rationalised that, because I don't think either of us really thought that hard about what would go where. We were thinking we want to put out one album, but and I can't tell you exactly why that wasn't possible. It was like you couldn't go to us unless we set up a whole Beat Bite persona and a Beat Bite page and everything. We couldn't do that. Yeah. And get, sort of things going to both of our social things. So we had to split them in half, have half that would have, were basically put out by me and half that were put out by him. So I don't really think that
we thought about it too. Yeah.
No, we didn't think about it that deeply. Well, certainly, I don't think we did.
Well, that's why I'm here. This is my job.
Exactly.
My job is to find the bits that clearly you all just overlooked.
That we didn't even know that we were doing.
That you were doing, that's exactly.
Wow, you're really good.
I'm here to remind you of your genius runs so deep that you're not even aware that you're doing it.
Yeah. And thank you for taking the time to ask me about stuff, because as you say, nobody else does. So this is quite an unusual experience.
They're really, the thing about Levities is, yes, I have heard a lot of Levities collaborations and I'm quite aware of his love for that kind of thing. But there's a different kind of connection between the two of you, because it feels like you've both been doing, or you both have similar attitudes and similar styles in the approach, and to have them meet, and particularly in those two EPs, I don't know. I feel like it just kind of been there forever, and it was just a matter of time before you did.
Yeah, that's nice. And I think we'd both like to do more. It felt like a good meeting for me. And as I say, I'm not like the world's best networker, so unless I really feel a certain kinship with someone, I'm not gonna do that. And Levity seemed to be the person in terms of experimentation and being inventive and playful
playful. That's the thing. I mean, he's so fun with what he creates, and so are you. That it's.
Plus, we've got quite different strengths, so there will be more. There will be more Beat Bite things.
I'm a boy, a great big fiery boy. When I walk, thunder fills the air. Beautiful.
I often wonder whether not, I think you all as artists kind of see it, but I'm not 100% sure that you do. Doing these podcasts, I get, I do gratefully get to speak to children's performers all around the world, really. And New Zealand's a very high up respected country when it comes to the music. And I think I was talking about this last year when I was at the awards. You look inward, you really look inward at the children you're creating it for, and you look to each other and I sometimes wonder whether New Zealand is aware of just how much the rest of the world is looking in on you and watching what you're all doing. But which is wonderful. I think that's great though. I mean, that's, you're not
but it's a relatively recent development. It hasn't always been like this. I mean, I'm 693, so I can sort of see back a bit further. And it was a time where everyone was in their own little world doing their own little thing, and even then, that many people doing it. But the funding bodies and people like APRA, the Australasian Performing Rights Association, have been quite supportive. And now we are all aware, because of things like the internet and internet groups, that there are other people in the same boat and we can support each other. That has only happened like in the last 10 years. Before that, it wasn't like that at all. And when, with Fat Cat and Fish Face, we won Children's Album of the Year, it was like three people doing a slow clap in the back of an almost abandoned hall before the lights turned on and the doors opened and they let everybody else in to have the real awards. So that's what it used to be like. Now there are, you know, kids awards that you don't feel like you just tacked on the end of something. So things have changed a lot. So it's a relatively recent thing.
And as a mate, how do you feel? Has that changed, being 658 and being able to reflect on pre-internet recognition and post? I mean, how do you think it's affected you in and not really your promotional stuff, but your songwriting? I mean, do you feel it's had any impact on going, oh, there's more people that are enjoying what I do and I'm just gonna keep on doing? Or do you think there might have been a chance that you might have, if had it never moved on to this more supportive online world, that you might have chucked it in by now? Or like, do you think it's made an impact on your personal
Well, the funding's there, I'll keep going. My gauge of success is doing things I like with people I like. And that's still happening. So as long as that's going, and my brain is still operating at the level of a 7.5-year-old in terms of expression, then I will keep going. Well, I do like that you can do anything under kids' music. You know, it really, you can just take it anywhere, because it's a kind of a meaningless, I don't think it has that much meaning. And I think people will listen to what they want to listen to. And if adults are listening, they want to listen to it. It's such a weird thing, kids' music. And it used to be even worse, because, adults would have to buy the music for kids. I do miss having a physical product, like putting out an album, because it is nice to say, oh, I did this, instead of I did something that I can't show you. And it is nice for presents and stuff like that. That would be sort of the thing I miss. And also the whole thing on singles is not really to my liking, and I don't listen that much to what other people are doing, and I should probably do it more, because I quite like to just keep my own little sort of thing going.
I think it's success though. You can fall into the trap of going, what is everyone doing? I need to somehow emulate that. I think I'm able to kind of just carry on with my own stuff, but then I also find myself getting caught up in going, oh, well, this song would work. And anyway, I think that is what it is. I mean, you talk about the success.
People write songs for different reasons. Yeah. And like with the group that I was talking about earlier, when the cat's been spayed, we thought, have fun, make money. That was like what we wanted to do there. Whereas with the weird experimental shit that I was doing at the time, that had a totally different thing. You can do many of those things with different songs within the general umbrella of what you're doing. So
yeah,
just do it all.
It's so cold up here on
It feels ridiculous to have this entire interview and not mention that I am led to believe that you are New Zealand's highest decorated children's artist in terms of winning things.
I'm not sure if I am. Anika Moa would be at least equal with what I'm doing. decorated.
In my little digging around, I think you're definitely pretty much up there. But it's quite a testament.
Funny, you don't tend to think back and feel like that. You just sort of keep plodding on.
I think it's a real testament to this idea that you talk about with the freedom. Is that it works. Anyway, let's not dwell on that. I want to actually talk about your creating process, because your music is. It's very sophisticated, even though we talk lots about fun and freedom and things. It's a very sophisticatedly created, which is a very hard thing for me to say right now. Where's that scotch? It feels like you start with an idea, which I'm guessing will hit you at any time. It's not when you're sitting at a piano, or it's when you're picking up the groceries or you're out finding a cat in the back. I mean, I guess that's where it hits you the most. And then I get this sense that you just run in, grab a thing, jot down the idea, and then you start building on top of that until you get to the
point. Isn't that kind of what people do? Don't you do the same thing?
It depends. I think some people will sit down and complete a song on a guitar before they actually go and put it down onto anything. I mean, me personally, I'm more what you do. It's I will go in and go, that's a nice beat, and I'll have plenty of those. And then some other point in the car, I'll go, oh, that beat could be about that thing I just saw there. And you rush home and you got to put it down. And then you go, how can I turn that into a bigger song?
There are certain places where I'm driving that the ideas come. It's quite interesting. Having gone, so the idea for the song Chihuahua came at one, that chorus came when I was driving on a certain route. And I noticed when I was driving that same route the other day, I had another really good idea at exactly the same spot, which I thought was quite funny.
Yeah, you need to find different ways to drive around that spot.
Now, walking and driving are good things to do.
Yeah. So, and I guess my point to that is you are pretty independent with your production. Like you're saying, you'd send it someone to be mixed, but you don't necessarily need to rely. You don't need to rely on anyone else to see your ideas to fruition. Does that can mean a couple of things. It can mean you have the opportunity to really get in and create this stuff that you really turn into something that you find really valuable and you love. It can also mean you have potentially 50 untouched, unfinished ideas.
I don't. I haven't done it so much in this album I'm currently working on, but I also like getting people in, and not just for singing that you mentioned, the collaborations with singers, like the Itty Bitty Beats and whatever, but I like to do that with musicians too. So I might get a drummer, a friend who's a drummer, but I pay them to play on a song, or a friend who's a guitarist. In the new album, there's a guy called Conrad Weddy, who plays in a group called the Phoenix Foundation, and I've known him since he was 8, and he's a really good guitarist. So I do like to, and there's a guy called Jeff Henderson, who's just a crazy sort of sax impro guy who always brings a really nice wildness, because sometimes you can get too tame and have everything perfect if you're working on a computer, and it's nice to bring other elements and other people in to to really stretch it out and make it not predictable, and to just bring in some real character.
Also just to play things that you wouldn't have thought of. I mean, I have a thing that if I'm going to have a clarinet part, I mean, unless it's a very specific thing that comes to mind, but if I go, that would sound nice with a clarinet in it, I'm not going to write the part. I'm going to get a clarinet player and go, it's your instrument. As you said, I'll pay you. What do you see here? What can you get out of it? And you know, that comes down to picking the players, right? You trust what they're going to.
Well, that's why I tend to work with sort of old friends. I could probably, I could meet some new friends very easily, and maybe this podcast will lead to that. But with Jeff, he does like 9,000 tracks while I'm sitting there with him going deaf and trying to make sure he's got the microphone around the right way. But, you know, he just does thousands of different tracks, and I go through afterwards and get something that kind of works from where I'm at. But again, it's giving people that, because I trust them and like them, or else I wouldn't ask them, giving them freedom to add stuff as well.
They say that money don't grow on trees.
Grow on trees, grow on trees.
They say that money don't grow on trees. But baby, I've seen it's golden leaves.
Golden leaves, golden leaves. Baby, I've seen it's golden leaves.
was listening back to, I was listening to Chewett Stewart.
Feels like it,
I'd want to ask you a question about that because it presented a particular idea of songwriting to me that I feel like may be correct with you or maybe not. Chewett Stewart, it's another really hard thing to say.
I've never heard those words come from another mouth before, Chewett Stewart.
Chewett Stewart.
It's amazing that you're asking me these things. I keep going on about it, but it's like I'm doing things and I drop them into a well and I don't, oh, bye.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is amazing that you actually...
Well, the thing I love about Chewett Stewart is from a production and creation point of view is it feels like it was a very quick song. It feels like you had the idea, you grabbed, a guitar, you sat down and you did it and it just poured out and then you recorded it and it just all poured out. I'm suspecting not every song in your repertoire happens at the same pace and in the same
way.
But in all the amount of work that you've made, is there anything? Are there any creative traits within you that you recognize come up again and again? Like,
why don't you tell me about them? Because I'm in it. I can't see the wood for the trees. What do you see?
I don't know. Like, I guess, like, you talk about lyrics. Like, I mean, lyrics are often a very different part to the creation of the sounds themselves. And often you'll find people need a very different type of environment or space for lyrics. For example, like some people go, me personally, I'll have the whole album written and then I'll go, right, I need my pad, I need my coffee, I need to go sit out the back and I need 3 or 4 days penciling away just because I get too carried away in the other stuff to really give it thought. I mean, let's talk about lyrics then. I mean, is that something you do need the real, it's a different type of focus for you, or does it still come out as you're creating the song?
Yeah, no, it mostly is all comes out kind of at the same time. Right. It's fairly all together. But then things do happen you never know. You just never know. But mostly it all kind of tends to come out together. And although some things come really quickly, some things, I go over a million times before I get them right. I'm happy with them. There's a song called Popcorn on the new album that I'm working on with an old friend called Lorenzo Bune, who is an Italian-American who lives in...
Who just happens to have an amazing name.
Yeah, and he's older than me. He's older than me, and he's an old punk bass player from the LA days. He played in groups called Fear and other things that I've never heard of. That was apparently quite a big sort of thing. Now he's got into very subtle kind of sound and does a lot of mixing. So he's in this as a co-producer with me. And why am I? Oh yeah, so the song Popcorn, I just had a lot. Popcorn started because the thing of my car, the number plate is PKN, and I really have a thing of seeing what comes to me with people's number plates.
Yeah.
Also, my mother who died said that she would contact me through number plates, not in a tour of a woo-woo-woo way, but just in a fun kind of fun. So PKN was the thing of my the number plate, so Popcorn came from that idea.
Yeah, right.
It's a pretty crazy track, but that took about, so many different goes because it's got so many different weird parts. That took a lot of moving back and forward and changing, and I think it works really well now. Whereas a song, for example, the song Weedy that was in the
Flea Bite One.
The Flea Bite One, that's right. I mean, that was basically me just having an idea and going doing it all in a day, like you say, just trying. Yeah. I was trying to do something like that because normally I do take time and do all the arrangements as I go, and I wanted to do something that was just getting the whole thing completed and sitting down at one session, which is what we used to do back in the day with Fat Cat and Fish Face. We'd get together on a Tuesday from, 2 to 4, and we'd come up with something every time that was the thing. We had to come up with something every time we sat down. So that was sort of harking back to those days and not doing the getting too caught up in the technical side of things.
Stewart was a greedy lad was he. He had 4 pies for breakfast and an antelope for tea. He didn't have no manners, you could say he was rude.
I'll say.
He burped and slurped and snorted and he didn't chew his food.
Chew it,
chew it. Don't make me tell you this again. Chew it, skew it, just do it.
You've had several albums with Fleetwood over the last 10 years, 2011 to 2021. You know, at the start, there was an album every year. Then you sort of, there was an album, I think, but there was like a 4-year break and so on and so forth.
Well, that's because I had a nervous breakdown in the middle of that, but that's what happened.
Okay. That will definitely get in the way of that.
Yeah.
But then in 2021, the big thing that happened is you 2022. Two, I guess, really, you did launch into singles world. It's been like you've obviously had the EPs, but even the EPs you've released, every single one pretty much has a single. You have touched on this, but is this just a sign of moving with what's going on around you? Is that really?
Yeah, because I take the lead of people I know, well, in the New Zealand scene. Mm. Are really good at it, and I see what they do. And basically, you put everything out as singles, you pitch it to Spotify, though, you know, the Spotify editors, though I have heard that there is now only one Spotify editor for children's music in the entire world, and they're based in New York. Probably AI will take over that whole thing. But there's no point getting your knickers in a twist too much about that.
Wow.
I don't know. That's what a guy, the guy who runs DRM, who is our aggregator over in New Zealand, he's just a little local kind of thing. And I like supporting, you know, little sort of good but independent local things because that's kind of what I am. He was saying just the other day that there's only the one person now in charge of Spotify. I mean, please, someone, you know, tell me if I'm wrong. It's sort of a bit sad.
Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah,
but
that's
New Zealand kids musicians like, you know, Itty Bitty Beats who have cracked the whole algorithm thing, which is basically put stuff out, something out every 2 weeks. So I'm not at that point because I'm doing it all myself. So I can't sort of, I haven't got a production line thing going, but I can see how it works. And it is very different to, you know, to how things were when I started out. It is a very different thing, and it will get even more different. And, you know, I'll whinge for a while and then I'll, you know, go ahead and try and join it.
So I was listening to Hair, your first Flairbite release. And the one thing that struck me is how true you have been to yourself since back then. When we're talking 13 years ago of releasing music. And I think that's pretty rare to meet someone who's... evolution has been quite consistent.
Or evolution has been stunted, you could say. It could go either way, stubborn that I've stayed in that kind of zone.
I think generally what happens is people, their first album will inevitably have songs about pirates and songs about traffic and songs about toileting and those kind of things. And then as they actually start looking into children's music, they go, oh, actually there's a whole world of music.
Yeah.
I didn't know existed, and then they start, you know, getting a little bit more relaxed about the whole thing, which was my journey. Seems to be a lot of people's kind of paths. Whereas you sort of really came out of the gate, even though you'd been doing other stuff prior to this, but it feels like you've always been very.
I was born fully formed. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think you've always just been really true. I think I guess what it says to me is you're very clear on the things you want to create.
Because I came out of an egg, that's why. I'm not a mammal like the rest of you. Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Well, that answers that question. I wasn't expecting that, so I don't really have a follow-up. But I guess the question to you, when you've mentioned it, you've talked about it quite a lot in this chat, but as a takeaway, as a soundbite, as a whatever you want to call it at the end, how How much of that real freedom and staying true to yourself is something you have to very consciously approach, or is the trick for you to be absolutely, completely unconscious to it and just let whatever comes out, comes out?
Yep, I think caffeine is the answer to that particular thing. I just find that is a really good fuel and helps just unlock everything. Yeah, I try not to be conscious about it. As I say, I'm a control freak in almost every other aspect of my life, but in this stuff, I tend to, I feel very grateful to have this as an outlet, but I just go with whatever is coming up. I don't think I want to do a gospel song, I want to do a something. I just see what comes up after I've had a coffee, got it all set up, and just see what comes. And if it feels like a good one, then I just go with it.
And if it feels like it needs a gospel choir, then you get a gospel choir for it. But well, that hasn't happened yet.
It has, actually. We did one called Money Tree, and it wasn't a choir. It's just two guys I know, and it took a lot of because
it's an a cappella, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an a cappella one, that's right. An a cappella with people who aren't necessarily singers, but one of them was the guy I was mentioning before, Jeff, who is the wild saxophone player. So trying to tame the wild Jeff into having a part, that took quite a lot for the poor person mixing to try and get that to happen exactly the right way. But yeah, no, that was, well, is it gospel? Is it bebop? I'm actually not brilliant with what genres are called, but yeah, perhaps it's bebop. Some sort of more semi-classical stuff. Just my sister has dementia, and she's just gone into a dementia ward. She's about 12 years older than me, and she's got early onset dementia. She loves music, and I'm, you know, it's not necessarily music she knows that she likes. It's amazing how much, because there isn't a lot going on in her head, music takes up. She loves it to take up as much room as possible. And I was thinking, it'd be nice to do some stuff, just sort of honouring sort of a pure sort of thing with music that maybe something more classical could have. But there again, I don't really know people who play classical instruments, but we'll see. That might be something I'd be interested in doing.
It's an interesting thought, actually, because if you put it in the world of children, that's kind of also where children are at. I think, you know, as you get older, you start to develop an idea of what you want music to make you feel. And you, I mean, not everyone, but a lot of people, I guess, and dare I say it, sort of in the mainstream or listen to the mainstream, tend to wrap it up in, you know, oh, what's good for a party, or I'll listen to that because I've had my heart broken or something, which is absolutely, it's a beautiful way to use music. But I guess children are still just kind of going, it's everything I hear and see is new to me, and I'm just sitting here taking all of this in, finding where I fit the best in all these different sounds. And it's, yeah, I think it's really beautiful to respond to. And it's beautiful to see the way you respond to that. And I'm going to use the word responsibility, and I don't mean it in a general term. I mean just the responsibility to
be creative. Don't weigh me down. Carry on.
But I mean responsibility to yourself as a creative person. I mean, I think there's an element of and I think you do it beautifully by just going, my responsibility here is to really just get out of the way and let it just pour from me, and that's my job, and that's the greatest homage I can pay to the talent that I have. And and that's great, because you're just giving children an opportunity to hear things that, let's face it, they're probably just not going to hear anywhere else, and it's a blessing to have. One last question, one last thing. It's a statement, really. Here Comes the Rain is... It's beautiful.
I'm just amazed at the things you've listened to. I thought no one ever listened to these things, so that's astonishing.
It's my job.
Thank you.
It's not my job. It's my joy. Less of a question. This is more just an acknowledgement of admiration. However, what it does highlight in all your music, just to wrap it up, is this real beautiful notion of the consistency in your total absolute inconsistency. And it's a real joy, and it means whatever's coming next.
I'm still using the same notes. It's not that inconsistent. I haven't invented a whole new sort of tonal.
That makes it even more impressive, because I have no idea what's going to come up next, even though I know it's going to be the same notes I've heard for the last 15 years. You know, who knows what happens. And it's just a joy. It's really nice. I personally, as an individual, love not knowing what's coming next. That's where in music made for adults, all of it, that is where I find the most joy.
Surprise.
Knowing what's happening.
That's right. Well, it should be a journey, and surprise is a big element of that. I agree. Mm.
So thanks for chatting to me on Benny Asking Rob and Nathan Questions. And
it wasn't just asking questions, Benny. You had provided so much yourself in doing it. You've said such beautiful, kind things that no one's ever said. I'm thrilled to have talked to you. But
I'll
why I agreed to the interview, because you're obviously a very good person.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you, more importantly, for the music that you make. And looking forward to what happens next. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Benny.
If you'd like to know more about Robin, then head along to her website at fleabite.co.nz. And of course, for more Benny Time goodness, head along to bennytime.com. Thanks for listening to me, Benny, asking Fleabite questions.